Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. Idea Talks is a monthly conversation with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. For more information on this podcast and others, visit joshtice.com.
Are you getting fired up and fueled up? There are a lot of conferences for pastors that give inspiration and motivation to fire you up about doing ministry. But as I travel around the country and talk with pastors, I find many pastors are motivated to their calling. What they are wanting is practical ideas to fuel that calling. What if there was a conference that could get you fired up and fueled up? I want to invite you to Idea Day, a day designed by pastors for pastors with one purpose, ideas. Pastor Josh Tice and his team at Southern Hills Baptist Church have created an experience that feels more like a conversation than a conference. At Idea Day, you will be invited to learn ideas from other pastors while contributing ideas that have worked well for your church. You will get and give practical ideas about leadership, financing for your church, taking the next step in church growth, even ideas for facilitating small groups that are effective. Don't miss this incredible day that will fire you up and fuel your ministry tank.
Welcome to today's edition of the Idea Talks podcast. This is Drew, your co-host. Today, I'm very excited to introduce a special episode we recorded not too long ago, which is an interview between Josh and Tom Rayner. In this interview, Josh asked some really awesome questions that will hopefully be a small preview of what's to come at the Idea Day Summit on January 28th and 29th here in Las Vegas, Nevada. You know, as I record this, we are a little over a month away from the Idea Day Summit. It's going to be an exciting time. I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of people there, but it's going to be an exciting time and hopefully an encouraging time for a lot of pastors and ministry leaders there to interface with one another and get to know each other a little bit better and to hear from a very special guest, Tom Rayner, who's wrote a lot of different books, but a very special book called Simple Church. I look forward to the interview today. So without any further ado, here is Josh Tice and Tom Rayner.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Idea Talks. This is going to be a unique episode because we're not only recording it by audio, we're recording it by video. And so this will go up on our YouTube channel as well. I'm joined today by my friend, Dr. Tom Rayner, who is a great author, has written some of the books behind me. Most of these books, by the way, are just props.
I believe it, yeah.
My daughter said, did you read all those books? I said, no, a pastor has to have a lot of books to make him look academic.
Yeah, it looks good. It really does. Almost looks like it's coming in a corner at your head.
I mean, my office is, when we built this building, Dr. Rayner, we built an office that is about 4 foot by 5 foot. And it basically holds books, primarily because when we built this, we said everything needs to go into ministry space. We don't need a lot of offices. We're in the community serving anyway. So it's pretty much a bookshelf is what my office is.
Well, and if you're comfortable, Josh, Tom is fine with me.
All right.
Instead of the former title.
I appreciate it. Behind your back, I already call you Tom. So now it's good that it's happening.
I'm glad you don't call me Thom like some people do.
You know, when I first read your book, Simple Church, that's what I thought it was. That was my first introduction. In fact, a lot of our audience, that was their very first introduction to you and your ministry. Obviously, I'm in the Independent Baptist movement, and you part of the Southern Baptist Convention. We don't have a lot of the same connectors until somebody writes a book that is vastly read, and there were a lot of people reading your book. Fantastic book. But I thought it was Thom for the longest time.
Only if there's a Thomas out there is it Thom.
Well, I love it. Well, I have some questions that have been coming from some friends as well as myself in preparation for Idea Day that's coming up. And we're so thankful, by the way, for those who are just going to listen to the first part of this podcast and skip the rest. This is also promoting and pushing toward the Idea Day Summit that's coming up here in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're very excited about it. It's the grandest one we've done. And it's going to be January the 27th and the 28th. We'd love for you to join us. Dr. Tom Rayner will be with us as well. He's not only going to be here for our keynote on Monday evening, which is going to be a spectacular service that we're preparing as well. He's also going to be there for the Idea Day itself, to be at some of the panels and be in some of the discussions. It's going to be a great resource to have access to you, Tom, throughout that entire day, as well as at the end of the day, there is an interview. The interview will be, I think, at 4 o'clock, where I'll be doing something similar like that, like this, and we'll be taking questions from the audience. So if you haven't signed up for Idea Day, do so immediately. It's at ideaday.net, and you can sign up even today. But in preparation,
first of all, I'm looking forward to being there. And secondly, Nellie Jo, my wife, is coming with me. She doesn't always travel with me, but she just said, this sounds fascinating. We're going to be there, and we're going to be giving of ourselves the whole time that you need us. Those are going to be formal engagements, but I'm an introvert, and usually mingling is not one of my spiritual gifts, but I am going to be mingling. And if there needs to be some hallway conversation or just some informal cups of coffee, I'm going to be there throughout all of this. So I look forward to meeting people individually, not just them seeing me on a stage or a platform somewhere.
It's very good to be able to have that resource. Literally, I know many people that would have wonderful, good questions. And the great thing about Idea Day, it's not a massive conference. We're not talking T4G here. We're talking, there's 250 of us at max, which means there's going to be a lot of interaction that you'll be able to have. And if you're watching this and say, boy, I have some questions. I really do have some questions. Fantastic. Utilize this beautiful, wonderful couple that has been serving God for many years. And that brings me to this. Bring your wife at this conference. Heather and I want to host you and your wife at this conference. And as the Rainers are here as well, boy, it's going to be a blessing to have them. And you're going to be able to want to speak into them to speak into your life. So thank you for saying that, Dr. Rainer.
Sounds great.
All right. I've got some questions here for you. Let's jump right into it. First of all, I've got this one from a few friends asked this one. Chad and Rodney said this. I pastor, both of them had a similar type of question. I pastor a small independent Baptist church and have been approached by another church congregation for a merger with theirs. What are three thoughts that you would have for me?
Okay, first of all, we need to find out who is merging with whom. There is rarely a merger of equals. So when you begin to talk about mergers, there's usually someone who is initiating, come and absorb us, or we want to absorb you, whichever way you want to. I think there are other phrases that we talk about that we use, but basically when you're talking about a merger, you're talking about one church that is going to be, to say dominant church is not the best wordage or the best verbiage, but one church that will have the greater identity of the two. So the first question that I would ask is, who is asking for the merger? Is it the church that wants to be acquired, or is it the church that desires to acquire? Usually it's the former, not the latter. Usually it's the church that wants to be acquired that sees itself in a position where it could be in a better, healthy position by being a part of something else. So that is question number one. Number two, is this going to be a multiple location situation, or is it going to be people who come into the current facility, or are you going to be multi-site? Quite frankly, I get more excited about multi-site than I do a merger into one physical location. Multi-site has a much faster growth record than single site. So once you go, it's just like any multiple units, whether you start groups or Sunday school classes or community groups, the more of those you have, the greater the growth opportunity that is there. So the next question would be, what is going to be the physical locations? Thirdly, who are going to be the leaders of this new merged church? Do you have two pastors that will become one pastor? Will one be retiring, which is not unusual? If you have two pastors that are staying on, both of them, what are the roles going to be? Those are three questions right off the top, Josh, that are very, very important. There are a lot of them. And, before you and I went on, you and I were talking about this world of coaching and consulting. And I was just sharing with you some of the things we've done in the past. And we're doing more and more of that, where we're going in, we're saying, okay, this will tell us if this merger or this acquisition or these new two churches coming into one are going to work. There's a fourth one. They asked for three, but I'm going to answer a fourth one. What is the DNA of Church A? What is the DNA of Church B? If they're diametrically opposed, in other words, if one church has no desire to reach in the community and the other really has a strong desire.
Yeah.
The merger of those two can actually be more harmful than helpful. So you have to ask the DNA question. So they asked for three, but those are four that when we look at, you're looking at different grades of church revitalization. First of all, church revitalization is a church that is getting healthier internally, that they're doing things themselves. Then on the other extreme, you have the church acquisition that is often called a restart or a replant. And that's what I'm hearing here. Right in the middle of those three is a church relaunch. And that's where a church says, we've got a negative reputation in the community. We're going to actually shut down for 2 or 3 weeks and then restart ourselves with a new, fresh identity. So those are the three types of things that are going on. That does not get to the specificity of what you ask, but those are the questions that I would ask if it's a true church acquisition.
Now, I've seen on Church Answers this question come up before, and how often on Church Answers would you have that question about mergers come up? I mean, is that quite a bit?
It's coming up more and more. It is one of the major trends that I have noted since 2017, where church acquisition, church merger, we're seeing more what I would call lateral growth of churches by acquisition, and then the individual campuses begin to grow at a greater rate than we are seeing an individual campus grow. Yeah. I was in conversation, if I were to give you the name of the church, you would know it right away. And the pastor asked me the question, where do you think we should go with this? And I said, I think you have a ripe opportunity, but to be a multi-site church and even look into church acquisitions. And he said, that's what I thought. We've never done it before, but I want to look at it. So, Josh, it is becoming extremely common. Extremely common is an overstatement. It's becoming common, and it is growing as a common phenomenon that is taking place. So watch for it. It's going to be happening more and more, including the more conservative churches that maybe have not even broached that path before, because it's just not something that has been part of their methodology or their approaches. We're seeing it even more common than that. And here's something else. We're seeing it more common in smaller churches. Mm-hmm. It used to be that this would be something we'd see in the 2,000 attendance church. Then it became common in the 1,500 and 1,000 attendance. Now we're seeing churches of 150 and 200 go down this path as the acquiring church, and that is the acquired church.
So if somebody's sitting there watching and they're like, well, I pastor a church of 300 in the middle of Minnesota, there's no way this is going to happen. I don't need this information. The answer is you might need this information. It might happen with you.
You're too young. I got to remind myself that you're a young whippersnapper and I'm an old fellow. But I can remember, Josh, when multiple services was really a controversy. Really? And that he's going to split the church and we're going to have two different churches. Well, you kind of do, because you really cannot have a single unit much larger than 100. So once you get above 100, you really do have different groups, not necessarily cliques, but different groups. And multi-service was really, really controversial. Some of that same controversy still exists today with multi-site, but more as the years pass, it is becoming an accepted practice of churches.
A lot of people that listen to this podcast are younger in ministry. So that means they just came out of Bible college or seminary. They are interning at a place. They just got hired on staff. Some of them are church planting, as well as some have just taken a church, but maybe in their 20s. The question comes up from Corey. What advice would you give to a pastor who is just starting out? This might be the senior leader, or it might be somebody else that is just on a staff. What would you say to somebody who's just starting out?
That person has to begin earning credibility. We often call it, some people call it chits, some call it chips. That person needs to start earning credibility.
In Las Vegas, we call it chips.
You do call it chips, and I'm going to put all the chips on the table and say that is exactly right. So that person needs to start getting those chips. And the best way to do this, I watched a pastor who's been at his church now for 25 or 30 years, and I watched him do this over the years. I haven't known him the entire quarter of a century, but I've seen a good portion of it. His name is Mike Glenn, and he's a church in the Nashville area. And Mike was the second pastor of the church, and he came in as a new pastor, and he did something that I thought was absolutely brilliant. He went to the longer-term members, and everybody, when you come there right away, everybody's going to be a longer-term member than you. And he says, tell me about some of the great days at this church. Give me your story. And the more he heard those stories, he used those stories to leverage the church into the future, reminding them of the risk they took, of the faith steps that they took, of the excitement they had of walking with God, he used those stories of their past to propel them into the future. So you're doing two things at one time as a new pastor. You're first of all doing a lot of listening, which is good. But second of all, you're not in a state of inertia where you're just waiting around and listening and hoping that you'll lead in some point. You're getting information that will help you lead in the future. So one of those first steps is to do that. Second step for a new pastor, get to know your community. You can know your community through data, but you can also know your community through relationships. The latter is obviously better than the former. I would recommend that every church do two types of studies on their community, a demographic study, which everybody knows what demographics are, and a psychographic study. Psychographics are what are the members of the community thinking? What is in their mind? What are their hopes, dreams, and aspirations? Those types of studies, by the way, Josh, are very inexpensive. Someone says we could never afford that. No, any church could do that for a couple of $100s. They could get this massive study done on their church.
Where does the church go about to find such a resource?
We have it. We're not the only one. So you could go to churchanswers.com, and we actually work with a company called Percept, and any requests that you have, but there are others that are out there. Mission Insight.
What I find fascinating by you, Tom, is that you're very hesitant to give the resource that you have because you don't want to be self-promoting. But in reality, there's a lot of people listening right now that had no clue. They had no clue that you could go to Church Answers and actually be able to hire them to do a demographic study for a few $100s that can really give them the data that they need to accomplish the mission of where they're at. So that's great. I'm really glad you brought that out.
Well, again, my purpose here is not to sell, just like you've said. If anybody is interested in that, they can. The best way to do that is just email Jana at churchanswers.com and say they heard us on this podcast. So it's JNA at churchanswers.com. And basically what Jana will do is ask for, you know, what area do you want to look at? Do you want to look at a radius? Do you want to look at some zip codes? Do you want us to do a custom polygon around your church? And she'll get that information, and she'll get the report done usually within about 48 hours, and boom, you've got a 30, 40 page report on your community. So that's the first thing, but that's data. The data points you to people, and then you get to know the people in the community. A pastor who is not involved in his community is a pastor who is not leading his church. Now, you can't do everything in a community. You can't go through every civic meeting or every government meeting, but you do need to pick and choose some things where you're connecting with your community on an ongoing basis. Those are the two things. I'd say that to any pastor, but I particularly say that to any young pastor. I would also recommend that a young pastor seek to be coached by someone. It could be an informal relationship with a pastor, a senior pastor or older pastor in the community. It could be something more formal, but I would recommend that they look into that and connect with someone that can give them the wisdom of years as they go through certain things. One thing that these young pastors need to know is there's probably nothing that they're going to go through that someone else has not been through before, and they know that path.
You know, it's fascinating you say that. In my conversations with, I'm 38, and with my conversations with pastors between 25 to 38, really 25 to 40, there's a strong desire to find mentorship. There's a strong desire to find coaching. Really, the question is, where do we find that? And like you said, if it's organic and there's that already relationship, go with that. But if not, you said that there are other ways to do that.
Yeah, again, you can connect with us. We have some great coaches. In fact, one of our new coaches that's coming on board with us is a guy by the name of Dr. Chuck Lawless. And he's going to be spending most of his time at Church Answers doing consulting and coaching. I just assigned, with his acceptance, I assigned 5 new coaching clients to him. And he's one of the best in the business. We have others, but that would be an example. Again, without being too salesy, we make it, again, very affordable. For the smaller churches, we keep it at the $100 a month rate to get ongoing coaching.
I love it. Here's a question that came in from Adrian. He speaks about Simple Church itself. Would you recommend that a pastor implement a Simple Church strategy on his own or from a collective leadership group?
You cannot implement a Simple Church strategy on your own. the very nature of simple church means that you are connecting disparate parts of the church. So you start off with clarity, which is where are we going? And then you go to alignment and movement, which means what are the different parts of the church? What are the different ministries of the church? Are they aligned with the vision? There's no way a person can do that as a solo exercise. That person has to have not only buy-in, but he has to have actually people laboring through the simple church process. So don't try to do it on your own, because you won't do it on your own.
So how do you go about getting that community involvement, that leadership?
Well, first thing, again, buy-in is critical, Josh. And buy-in means that even if you have an idea, strong idea that God has spoken to you about the vision of the church, that vision is not going to be embraced by the congregation unless they have some sense that they have had a part in it. So here is just a very practical example. I was working with a pastor of a fairly new church running about 150 in attendance, been around for about 2 years. And he asked a very similar question. How do I do that? How do I get the buy-in? He said, I've got a good idea where we want to go. He said, in fact, I'm pretty convicted of it. But I know if I just drop this down and this is the direction we're going, I may have 3 follow me, but 120 go the other direction. And I said, sit down with some of your key leaders. You may want to share a vision at the beginning, but you want them to have input. You want them to give you feedback. And when it's all said and done, if you can get some key leaders on board with that vision, then those key leaders can be those who will influence others to align the simple church or the ministries with that vision.
Yeah, I love it. Man, that's fantastic. Okay, so here comes a question specifically from Hayden. This is a very practical, low-level question, not a big one, that changes the direction of the church. He states, you seem to highly dislike to take a moment and greet someone at church. This is a fun one. A moment that so many churches do. What's a better way to do this? And then he mentions, I feel like it's a highlight moment for our church on Sundays. Now, let me give you a little background. My friend Hayden is not pastoring a traditional church that's been around for 100 years. He pastors a church plant that's mostly young people and has about 150 people, and they seem to really enjoy that, a lot of younger people. What would you say might be a better way, or is that just a personal thing?
It's a lot personal, because of my introversion.
So personality
plays in. Yeah. Basically, I think he's talking about what many churches call the meet and greet time, or shake hands or greet someone during the worship service. So there is some personal that is connected there. Even if I do not have to go to the facilities, I find a way to go to the restroom during the meet and greet most of the time. Anyway, because I am so incredibly introverted. So there is a personal bias in there. Now, here's what I would say to any pastor. You are anybody in a church. You know your church better than Tom Rainer knows your church. And just because Tom Rainer has said something that reflects his own bias, don't necessarily think that that is best for your church. You know your church. And so there is no rule about this. This is not a biblical issue unless you talk about greeting the saints one another, or maybe a holy kiss or something like that. The second part, though, Josh, is this. In our surveys of this, we have found that a slight majority of church members like it. They like the meet and greet. We have found that an overwhelming majority of guests cannot stand it. Okay. And the number is right at 90%.
Wow.
So when you're talking about we like this, it's usually those who know each other.
Yeah.
Who are comfortable with one another. Yeah. Those who are coming in there for the first time feel that it is artificial. That is overwhelming among the guests that are there. So I wanted to distinguish my bias. I wanted to talk about who likes it, but who said they do not prefer the meet and greet.
A follow-up question, what if we don't care what the guest thinks?
Well, if you don't care what the guest thinks,
I'm kidding.
I want to talk to you about the Great Commission. let's go to Matthew 28 and Acts 1:8, and let's talk about reaching beyond ourselves. If you don't care what the guest thinks, we got a lot of other issues to deal with.
Okay, so I've got another question here specifically about revitalization, which is a passion of yours and the passion of mine. And we talk about on this podcast actually quite a bit. So, and on this YouTube channel, what preparation should you have before pastoring a church that needs revitalization?
First thing you have to do is you have to have a preparation of prayer. But and that sounds like a trite answer, but it is absolutely true. Don't go into a revitalization until you are prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed up, because you will not do this of your own strength or your own power. One of my favorite passages in the Old Testament, I love the Minor Prophets, and Zechariah, the fourth chapter, it is about rebuilding the house of God. It is rebuilding the temple. And in Zechariah 4, the angel of the Lord comes to Zechariah, who gives a message to Zerubbabel. And the message to Zerubbabel is, "Zerubbabel, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord God Almighty." That's rebuilding the temple, but the metaphor is perfect for the New Testament as well. It points to the not only to Christ, but to the local church as well. We cannot do this of our own strength and our own power. Second preparation that you need to have is you need to have someone that is ready to walk alongside you in this. We talked about coaching or mentors. Leaders in revitalization, Josh, can feel so incredibly lonely. I know that perhaps some point in this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about Revitalized Network, but one of my passions is not just the revitalization of churches, it is the networking of leaders to revitalize churches. Because when you go in this on your own, it can be incredibly lonely, frustrating, and it can cause many to give up as well. So you need someone to walk alongside. A third thing you need is tactical patience. That is a phrase that's created by my friend Mark Clifton. And tactical patience means you have to be prepared for the reality that this revitalization is not going to happen overnight. And what type of investment of years are you willing to make in this church to see the change that will have to take place? Back in 1994, what year were you born?
1980.
Okay, when you were 14 years old, Josh. I wrote a book called Eating the Elephant, and the thesis behind the book is, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Even back then, I was talking about revitalization, even though that was not the word that we used. And in a revitalization, you need to accept three steps forward, two steps backwards, and live with those two steps forward as long as you two steps backwards as long as you go those three steps forward. That is why there's tactical patience that's needed. And then Here's the obvious, but I'm just going to say it. You need to love the people who are there, because they're going to go through change. It's going to be painful, and you have to love them. And there are some ornery people in churches, period. And there are a lot of ornery people in revitalization, because change is imminent and change is painful for many of the church members.
Well, I'm glad that you had a chance to mention that. I was interested as a friend, kind of what your perspective would be. And I do know that the SBC has gone through those type of issues as well. And so that insight is very interesting and helpful for us. And in reality, I've talked with a few friends. I'm not sure those that are listening or watching this later might feel about this. But in my conversation with pastoral friends, we've talked about the idea. I'm so thankful for an individual who will bring truth to light. As followers of the light, as followers of the way of Jesus Christ, truth is never something that's going to destroy the movement of Christ. Truth and light and bringing that truth to the reality, no matter how dark it was, needs to be brought to the light so that the Church of Jesus Christ in purity and in strength and in power can move forward like never before. So in reality, thank God that these things are coming to light. I mean, what a terrible thing it is to cover sin. Let's bring it out to the light, shine a light on it, and then all of us together condemn it, say, no, that's wicked. That's not who we are. Let's confess and get right with God. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, Josh, several months ago, almost a year ago, I like to be more helpful than harmful on social media. I mainly point to my content or to my family, love my family. But there were some things that were going on within my own denomination. And so I used in brevity on social media, because of my position within my denomination, I happened, even though I'm retiring, I'm still the CEO of the largest organization within my denomination, I use that platform to speak out against, not an individual, but against the evils that were happening in many of our churches. And I caught a lot of flack for it because it was perceived to be an attack on people. No, it was an attack on sin. And my silence said more than my not saying anything. Yeah. Wow. So been there, done that. It wasn't fun.
Okay, so you brought up Lifeway and the transition. And so I got to ask you, I'm excited about your transition because some of our audience may not follow your ministry as much as I do, but I'm excited about Revitalize Network. And so the question is, what is Revitalize Network and why leave Lifeway for this new ministry opportunity?
First of all, Lifeway has been an incredible blessing. I've been there going on 14 years now. Never thought I would be at Lifeway, had no desires to be. That's a story in itself we can talk about sometime in the future. But Lifeway is the largest Christian resource company in the world, and I've had opportunity through my leadership to touch a lot of different places. My leadership has been far from perfect, but it's been something that God has just used over these last 14 years. Also, I'm 63 years old, so I am not a youngster. And I have been determined, Josh, from the days when I was your age, that I would finish before people were asking me when I was going to finish. And it was really refreshing, even at 63 years old, for people to say, why are you retiring this early? And instead of, when are you going to retire? When are you going to step down? The graveyard is full of indispensable people. Mm-hmm. And I know I am not indispensable at Lifeway. And so I knew that there would come a time that I would just say, it is time. I thought it would be 3 years ago. My original plan was a 10-year ride and then to step down at 60. I'm not going to go into what happened that kept me on for three more years, but I was certainly sure that I would be leaving by 63. Now, so the oftentimes in a call or a transition, there is a push and a pull. The push is away from something and the pull is to something. I don't feel like I'm being pushed too hard out of Lifeway, except for it's time for fresh leadership. It's just, it's time for that, for someone else to come in and to give it a new perspective. So I am letting that be the push, but I sure have a pull. And my pull is a desire to see churches get healthier. My desire is to see God's anointing, God's blessing on leaders and churches across North America and indeed the entire world. For that reason, I created and started an organization called Revitalize Network. Revitalize Network is a nonprofit, cross-denominational and denominational, but it includes many churches of many different backgrounds that come together for the sake of the gospel to work together for healthier churches. It is a network. It is not a denomination. I would never want it to be some type of hierarchical denomination. It is a voluntary network where healthier churches can connect with less healthy churches and that there can be some type of organic and official connection one to another. It is our desire over the next several years to somehow be used of God with financial resources and with practical application to see the trend in declining churches reversed and the number of church closures come to almost an end. That is an audacious goal, but at the same time, it is nothing impossible within the power of God. So Revitalize Network has launched. We're in our early stages of moving forward. And there will be some churches that have denominational affiliation and Revitalized Network. There will be some churches that are independent and a part of Revitalized Network. But all these churches love the gospel. They love the local church and they want to see churches get healthier. And we're certainly biblical in our confession and who we are.
And it's I'm so excited about it. And the reason I am is because once I found out about it, this is a passion of ours. This is the Idea Talks podcast and a YouTube channel anyway. And Idea Day really is all about that. It's about a day to share ideas. And it really has much to do with revitalization. So why? I know so many guys that are in a situation where they're taking over a church of 30 people and the church used to be 300. Some of them taking over a church of 300 and it used to be 3,000. And the question is, why have we seen such decline? And how do you address those issues? How do you bring life back? And to keep from this church attendance decline is a great mission. But I love that that's not the only mission, that it's also to keep doors from shutting in totality. What a terrible thing it is. I'm all about church planting. We planted this church. At Idea Day this year, we're going to be supporting and gathering support at a church planters luncheon for 10 new church plants. All about church planting.
Excellent.
Hell yeah. Here's some of these guys. This is why this excites me so much. Here's some of these guys who could go in, and instead of taking a decade to get to the point where they own some land and a little building for the first time, they come in and immediately they have those resources. And they've got a core group of 30 to 35 people. And where they could go from there beyond, it just thrills me. And I think it's exciting.
The moment that you and I started conversing, it initially started as a conversation about Idea Day. When we started conversing, I went home and told Nellie Jo, I said, girl, this is a guy that gets it. And he has got a network of other leaders that with whom he is affiliated that gets it. And in my heart, in my mind, I sense a kindred spirit and a kindred desire to move forward together. So when you talk about being excited about Revitalized Network, I'm excited about Idea Day and connecting with you and these other pastors and other church leaders who will be there. And I do hope that a lot of the wives will be there as well so that they can be refreshed during this time.
I'm excited about Idea Day too. For those who are watching this now or they're listening, look, you haven't signed up, you need to. Or you thought, man, I'm coming, but I'm not bringing my wife, you need to. Or I'm coming, but maybe I should bring those deacons, you should. Idea Day is simple. It's a day to share ideas. No agendas, just ideas. And maybe you're at that point where you're like, I don't know what I'm going to do to break this 100 growth barrier. That's why you need to come to Idea Day. Or maybe you're at the point where you say, man, I don't know how I'm going to solve this situation with my missionaries. How do I reduce missionaries? Or how do I add missionaries? And how do I consolidate? That's why you need to be at that specific roundtable. Or maybe you're at the situation, you're like, okay, I'm ready to hire staff. How in the world do I do this? And how do I pay for them? We're having literal roundtable discussions about hiring staff. Every question that you might have or idea that you need, it's going to be presented in a conversational way by either whether the coaching experiences or one of the conversational roundtables you're going to love. This year, it's not just roundtable experiences and coaching sessions. There are also panels. And the reason we're doing that is because of the amount of people that are coming. Every hour, there will be a new panel in the auditorium discussing these type of issues. To find the full list of everything that you may miss out on if you don't come, go to ideaday.net and look at the schedule. Now, you talk about selling, Tom. I can't stop. I'm just too excited about this day.
You're not selling, you are expressing enthusiasm. And what I love about the word enthusiasm, it comes from two Greek words, in theos, in God. So you're just excited about what God is doing. And I can't wait to be there. I mean, I'm an introvert that is waiting with anticipation about talking with people. And I really mean it.
I'm excited about it too. Okay, the last question that somebody sent in is this. It's very simple. Tua or Jalen?
Yes.
That's the right answer. That's the right answer.
Saban did it, so I'll just say yes. You talk about two fine men with incredible Christian character and humility. I mean, how much have you heard Tua whining about not getting the Heisman? All he's been talking about, no, it's a team. It's a team. And look at Jalen and his humility.
Jalen's story. Wow.
It's absolutely incredible. So whether you loathe the tide or roll the tide, that is a story about two godly men, and that's why I say yes to both of them. And I suppose that Jalen will be going to another institution to get an opportunity to start next year. And whoever he goes to, I'm going to be pulling for that team, unless it's Auburn.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. My wife's from Alabama, so I get it. She's an Alabama Roll Tide fan for sure.
So where's she from originally?
Coleman.
Oh, yeah, near the Birmingham area.
Yeah, you know Coleman.
Well, I'm an Alabama native too. So it's yes. I know that area of the state as well.
It was great having this conversation with you. So very much appreciate it. Looking forward to Idea Day. And Dr. Rayner, as Jonathan would say, any last words?
Well, I want to be the advocate for Idea Day, not because I want to promote a person or a conference, but because I have a true sense that God is doing something through this ministry, through this time together. And look, don't miss out on it. Do not miss out on an opportunity to see what God will do, because I think we're not only going to go to Idea Day and have some great days, I think the result of it is we're going to have some great months and years as a result of it. I look forward to finding out what's happening.
All right, my friend. We'll talk again real soon.
Thanks, Josh.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Rayner.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.